Blog Talk Radio.
This one cracked me up. I was just like flabbergasted when I read this.
Oh, the one, the rate on the Gibson guitar factory. I didn't really understand that.
And
this was posted by
Natural News.
Natural News. Federal Gestapo illegally raid Gibson guitar factories, arbitrarily confiscate millions of dollars worth of wood used to make instruments. I don't understand that.
Due process under the law and assumed innocent before being proven guilty are two concepts that are apparently no longer applicable in the United States of America, at least as far as the federal government is concerned. For the second time in 2 years, armed federal agents have illegally raided the manufacturing facilities of Gibson Guitar Corporation, this time confiscating more than $1 million worth of imported wood in ebony. And they did so without proper notice or warning, without any valid reason, and without lawful charges of any kind. Gibson, one of the world's premier guitar manufacturers, and a company that has continually tried to honestly and readily abide by domestic and international laws concerning its material sourcing while continuing to provide quality products to its customers, has for some reason landed in the crossfire of the federal Gestapo. Though Gibson has not violated any laws, and has gone above and beyond mandated requirements for sourcing sustainable wood and some material for its instruments, the heavy hand of a bloated and out-of-control government has decided to unlawfully target the company for extinction.
According to recent press statements made by Henry Jerkowitz, Gibson's chairman and CEO, armed marshals stormed the company's Nashville, Tennessee, and Memphis, Tennessee, manufacturing facilities on August 24th and proceeded to evacuate the building, shut down production, and order all employees to go home and steal more than $1 million worth of rosewood and ebony that had been legally imported from India. "It is extremely troubling," stated a calm and collected but obviously shaken Jerkowitz during a recent press conference. "What's more troubling is that the Justice Department's position is that any guitar that we ship out of this facility is potentially an obstruction of justice and to be followed with criminal charges. U.S. officials have actually refused to tell Gibson what it illegally did wrong and why the raid was conducted. The company was never notified of any potential violations prior to the raid, and no official charges were ever filed. By all appearances, the government simply decided one day to unlawfully storm the company's manufacturing units with loaded weapons. It is now attempting to destroy one of the last honest American manufacturers in existence. It is not illegal. It was exported legally, endorsed by the Indian government. It was forest stewardship. Council
recognized
wood," stated Jerkowitz. "Concerning the stolen wood, we're not in the wrong. We haven't actually been charged with any wrongdoing, and yet our entire operation has effectively been noticed to be shut down.
U.S. government officials don't feel they even need a reason to perform raids anymore. The fact that the U.S. federal government is refusing to disclose why it raided Gibson, as well as it added failure to press any proper legal charges against the company, suggests there is truly no legitimate reason at all. Every guitar manufacturer imports rosewood and ebony from India and various other countries, and many do not even have the same high-quality standards as Gibson. And yet, for whatever reason, Gibson has become the government's chosen target, despite the fact that it has broken no laws and has never been convicted of any crimes. In today's America, in other words, government officials do not even need a legitimate reason to target a company, seize its goods, and shut it down. In total desecration of the rule of law, the federal government simply targets whomever it wants to these days without reason or cause and sends in its taxpayer-funded minions to perform the execution. In this case, the target is a leading U.S. manufacturer of musical instruments. While many other U.S. instrument manufacturers have outsourced production to other countries, Gibson has hired 580 American employees in the past 2 years alone, which built its guitars domestically. It is one of the few major U.S. companies that still produces a tangible, viable product within the country's borders, and one that is led by a humble and forthcoming CEO who has chosen to stick his own neck out on the line in the defense of his company and his employees. But apparently none of this matters to the corrupt federal government which ironically is charged with defending and protecting companies like Gibson, not raiding and terrorizing them. Be sure to watch Jesus's roughly 30-minute press conference here, and you can go to youtube.com, /watch?V=0.
Well, it's better to
just go to the naturalnews.com and go to this article. It says, if you own a guitar, you could be targeted by the feds based on corrupted Lacey law.
So federal officials have ordered that Gibson stop manufacturing and selling guitars. Jeskiewicz has instructed his employees to continue operations, indicating that he alone will take personal responsibility for any potential repercussions. Ceasing production indefinitely at the arbitrary command of the federal officials, especially without a valid reason, would destroy the company. So, for the time being, Gibson is still manufacturing and distributing guitars and waiting to see how the government responds. It is also trying to seek justice for the stolen wood, which was certified as legal and sustainable, though it has yet to make any considerable progress in this endeavor. In the meantime, those who own Gibson guitars and potentially even guitars of other brands may want to prepare themselves for potential targeting by the federal government as well. The vague wording of the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Lacey Act of 2008, which is a law that was somehow used to warrant the Gibson raid, places all guitar owners and resellers in the crossfires of a potential federal scrutiny.
According to the Lacey Act, if you bought a guitar from us and you resell it, you are criminally liable, stated Jasuski. Everyone who touches the product, the store owner who sells that guitar, is criminally liable. It doesn't matter whether you knew it or not that there was some issue here. It's a pretty dangerous precedent, in my opinion. Coverage in the Calgary Herald adds that guitar owners who do not have proper documentation for their instrument could potentially face its confiscation if the feds feel as though something about the guitar is in violation of the Lacey Act.
It does not matter if the guitar was produced in full accordance of the law. The government decides that some aspects of the guitar is in violation of the Lacey Act, it could theoretically seize it or any other wood-containing instruments at airports, country borders, and other areas, and even arrest the instrument owners in the process. Most people would say you have to know you did something wrong to do something wrong. The law says no, you don't have to have done anything wrong to be going to jail, added Jeskiewicz concerning the Lacey Act. So you have it. The U.S. has literally devolved into an unbridled police state where the federal government freely raids companies, arrests innocent individuals, and performs other acts of domestic terrorism for absolutely no reason at all. The enemies of freedom that now run our government presume guilt rather than innocence, and they deny the constitutional protocols of due process that they are tasked with upholding in the process. People assume if you're going to be investigated by the federal government that you're guilty, stated Jeskiewicz, about the lunacy of what his company now faces. We can't even say that we're not guilty of this because we're just guilty of something they can't tell us yet. Think about that. How do you respond to that?
Sounds to me like they're targeted for...
trumped up charges.
Yeah, because they're an American firm.
Yeah.
All American firm. This is what's happening. It's sick. Sick. I love this one. This was from a Wonkit website. And here, check this. This is so bizarre, but it's true. It's a true story about Joe Biden. And
well, he's an idiot.
Oh, he's a complete moron. Joe Biden stumbled out of. Joe Biden loves $125 billion lost war. Mocks $125 tortoise website. Joe Biden stumbled out of his call center cubicle yesterday and decided to do something idiotic again. What did the human embarrassment do this time? Oh, just attack some low-paid government biologist for working really hard on an endangered species website that cost all of $125 a year. That's $125. That sounds a little bit like a number, Joe Biden loves to spend. But you need to add nine zeros, because that's what the administration spends killing American troops and robot bombing random villagers in Afghanistan every year. $125 billion. But spending 0.00000001% of that, about the price of an average household monthly cell phone bill, to maintain a website about the endangered state animal of California and Nevada, the beloved desert tortoise. Now, that's something Joe Biden doesn't care for at all. He sent an email about this to everyone to show what a jabbering imbecile he is. Yes, this is your former editor. Sorry, I had to come out of retirement for a few minutes to deal with this. That's fine. But, well, everything from kids' school lunches to Medicare is chipped away by a false crisis with the deficit. The never-ending wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and the other four or five Muslim countries currently being million-dollar bombed around the clock never seem to run out of American money. Afghanistan is costing $125 billion per year. If you believe the Pentagon's own numbers, which are even the Pentagon believes, it's not even the Pentagon believes. But Joe Biden doesn't care about that. He's too busy signing off on failed attempts at cutesy emails full of his staffers' attempts at mean-spirited humor, jabs directed at low-paid U.S. biologists who are using their expensive college educations to protect animal natural resource, America's natural resources. As if the scientists who work for their nation's government didn't get enough abuse from Bush administration over the last decade, now they've got to deal with Joe Biden mocking them for doing the jobs on a shoestring budget. That's from the San Francisco Business Journal reports on this obnoxious thing set out by the vice president. And they quote, "Most of the cuts we are going to make are small. They won't close the deficit or solve our fiscal problem." One of the budget outrages he listed, a website for the endangered desert tortoise. I bet you didn't know that your tax dollar pay for a website dedicated to the desert tortoise. I'm sure it's a wonderful species, Biden said. Did you LOL at Biden's stupid jab? Of course not. But we bet you felt something. Disgust, probably.
About that, right?
I just thought, you know, it's just, that's typical of Biden. He's such an asshole. Now, imagine he's one heartbeat away from the other asshole.
Yeah.
That's so scary. Now, here, you know, I personally, I think Cantor is a cancer. You know, I just think he's a cancer on American society. And he should be cut out. Definitely not elected. Eric Cantor tours the quake damage. Promises government has no money to help.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Major mental acid bath, Eric Cantor, is known these days for two things. One, as an incompetent whiner who was removed from any leadership responsibility in the debt ceiling negotiations after he threw a childish fit and tried to derail the deal. And two, as the guy who said to Missouri after it was butt-hammered with a slew of terrible storms that he couldn't allow any federal disaster relief until the government would agree to cut money from programs, Eric Cantor doesn't like to offset the relief funding. Now, everybody guess what happens next. There was recently a freak earthquake that originated in Eric Cantor's home district. What was Eric Cantor's message of hope for his constituents? Cantor was busy humping Glenn Beck's leg in Israel when the earthquake happened. But Cantor cut short his trip to fly all the way home and tell his constituents he won't help them unless the government can agree to make cuts to help offset any disaster relief funds. As we've mentioned before, Cantor was also the guy threatening to kill the debt deal by refusing to agree to any significant cuts. Sort of neat how that works, isn't it? And that's
sure.
Just what the guy said. I mean, you know, I love this guy, you know, the way this guy writes. He says, this guy is walking rat testicles attached to a nasal voice box. That was from Roll Call, actually.
Oh, boy.
That was funny. From
he
Roll
says
Call,
it like it is.
Oh, yeah. How's it from Roll Call blog? House Majority Leader Eric Cantor said Wednesday he intends to look to offset the federal aid is needed to help areas of his Virginia district that were damaged in the earthquake. There is an appropriate federal role in incidents like this, the Republican said after touring the damage. Obviously, the problem is that people in Virginia don't have earthquake insurance. The next step will be for Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell to decide whether to make an appeal for federal aid. Cantor said the House Majority Leader would support such an effort but would look to offset the cost elsewhere in the federal budget. All of us know that the federal government is busy spending money it doesn't have, Cantor said. Where the quake damaged some buildings along a busy shopping thoroughfare. And that's who I wrote.
Isn't it amazing how people like this Cantor guy get elected?
Oh, they're walking rat testicles attached to a nasal voice box.
Yeah.
I think he's just one sick son of a bitch. Anyway.
Well, they can keep him down there in Virginia. Don't send him to the nation. Imagine having your representative be that mean-spirited.
And to elect him, knowing that he was
must have been a fixed election.
This is what do we get there? We have time.
No one in their right mind would vote for somebody like that.
No. This one's more important than that one. A GOP congressman put constituents who asked tough questions on a watch list. Imagine that.
I saw that.
Yeah,
I was disgusted.
These are Republican bastards. They're just,
they think they're anointed or something. In recent weeks, GOP congressmen have resorted to all sorts of underhanded schemes to avoid interacting with their angry constituents back home over the August recess. Now, two Republican freshmen, Representative Daniel Webster, Republican Florida, and Tim Griffin, Republican Arkansas, are taking this trend one step further, using disturbing intimidation tactics and watch lists to discourage constituents from asking them questions. Representative Webster's Winter Garden, Florida district office gave out a watch list of six Floridians who had asked questions of Webster's previous town halls, at Webster's previous town halls. The list with the header for the media included names, photographs, and questions that members of the media should ask them. The watch list itself doesn't contain any information on who wrote it or where it comes from. The memo surfaced in Arkansas in connection to the office of Tim Griffith and were traced back to Representative Webster's office. With black and white photos that resemble police surveillance, some of them pulled from individuals' Facebook profiles, the memo was clearly meant to intimidate these six people and anyone else who might stand up and ask questions of their elected representative. At a Griffin town hall, staffers were handing out the watch list to attendees, calling it their homework. Griffin staffers were also spotted taking photos and shooting video of attendees, creating an extra layer of intimidation.
Well, Webster and Griffin are ostensibly making their list to screen out paid activists. The people they are targeting are regular constituents who have simply spoken up and expressed a disagreement about important policy decisions. Nevertheless, Webster's staffers clearly went out of their way to investigate the backgrounds of these individuals and insinuate people like them are not welcome at future town halls. In April, Think Progress reported from Webster's home district about a town hall where he faced a barrage of criticism for defending his support for tax breaks for the rich and the Medicare ending Paul Ryan budget. One of the constituents Think Progress interviewed, Tameka Pierce, ended up as a number five on the watch list. Imagine that. Pierce, who had to undergo chemotherapy, asked Webster a tough question about what would happen to people like her with major pre-existing conditions under the Republican budget. She expressed her disappointment in Webster for dodging her question, which apparently was enough to land her on McCarthy-esque list that pictures her like a criminal. In another instance, the memo suggests that members of the media question the military service of a 66-year-old Vietnam veteran named Ron Parcell. Parcell told the Orlando Sentinel, "I think it's pretty weird. someone asks a legitimate question and all of a sudden somebody's got a dossier on you, parcel added, it's the type of thing they're doing in old Russia. They do in old Russia. And that's what's happening, guys. I mean, that's what's happening. It's
scary,
huh? Freaking sick. I mean, these Tea Party bastards, I'm telling you, they're goddamn tyrants. They don't understand what they're doing there. This is a sick thing. I got another article on this too. NATO is just committing war crimes all over the hell.
I was reading this.
Yes. Freaking unbelievable. And
just dropping bombs.
Yeah,
it's
crazy.
Oh, we're using those drones all over the place and just...
Well, it's not just the drone factor. I mean, they're just raising the cities, and they're doing these bombing raids constantly.
Uh-huh.
But here...
is this in Tripoli?
Yeah. This is kind of a short one, so I chose it. NATO commits massacre at Sirte, razing the city to the ground. 3 days... of non-stop bombing away from the public eye, urgent appeals to humanitarian force NATO to stop the massacre. From the third day in a row, NATO aircraft are conducting massive missile and bomb strikes on the city of Sirte, hometown of Muammar Gaddafi, not allowing anyone to escape. And the city's perimeter is surrounded by rebel checkpoints behind... the exit for the city is completely blocked. Neither women nor children are allowed to leave. Men captured attempting to leave the town together with their families are shot. Their families are sent back to the city under bombing. There is practically no way to bury the corpses, and stated in a letter that was received at argumenti.ru. This morning, the writer is a former officer in the Soviet and later Russian Special Forces who is now in Sirte. The former officer of the Soviet, then Russian Special Forces, who was close to Colonel Gaddafi, decided to mention his name in the letter. In the city, until now, no troops, rebels, or special forces have dared to enter. In the night, there were many small provocations in order to try to establish the location of the government troops. As several small squads of rebels tried a probing action in the night of the reconnaissance but were destroyed. At the same time, in the air at the time was a remote-controlled reconnaissance spying aircraft, drone, which exposed the city's defense. After an hour, air attacks took place on these plotted points. However, defenders of the city have already left their positions to other locations. According to him, the situation resembles the terrible winter of 95 in Chechnya, when there was bombing everywhere that moved without proper guiding systems or accurate coordinates. The only difference was that then the Russian Air Force did not have much fuel. The flights are not as intensive as they are now. At the moment, the NATO Air Force is in the air almost around the clock.
Oh my God.
So they're just bombing the living Jesus out of everything there. Stupid. Anyway, we're waiting for our caller here. It's going to call it. He's coming up at 8:30, so hopefully he'll be with us. And let's see, there's one more I want to go. Yeah, this one is on fracking. I'd like to read that one on environmental as well.
Yeah, we should read that at the end. That's an excellent article on fracking.
Mean-spirited face of America.
Yeah.
And also, there's another one I might read. Appeals, Justice Department appeals Rumfell's torture decision. So he's not going to be tried.
This is from OEN.
Op-ed news.
Who are the mean-spirited face of America? Who are those guys? Those are the words that were said by Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid in that long-ago film classic of the same name, referring to the posse chasing them in the aftermath of the train robbing. Today, they quote what would be appropriate for Republican congressional House leaders for withholding disaster relief funds to the victims of Hurricane Irene. It seems before they'll give their consent to appropriate and release the funds, they're demanding equal cuts in other federal programs to offset the disaster expenditure. To this writer's knowledge, that's a first, and an ignorable one at that. If their position doesn't show where their priorities are, nothing will. It's like saying to a hit-and-run accident victim, we'll help, but first we have to get the money to pay for the ambulance before we can help you. Incredible. Apparently, they're advised by an ancestor resembling Dickens' fictional Ebenezer Scrooge to somehow appear fiscally responsible. Maybe they feel the victims are responsible for their own plight. Well, you knew the hurricane was coming. Why didn't you get out of the way? Maybe their stance isn't so incongruous after all. What they really want is to kill all government, have complete laissez-faire economics with no regulations in a society with a survival of the fittest mentality. That means no police, fire, water treatment plants, public education, libraries, roads, bridges, parks, not to mention Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and unemployment insurance. These Grinches may breathe the same air, walk the same streets, and inhabit the same country as yours, truly, but we have no human connection. Empathy for others' suffering is an alien concept to them. They are the mean-spirited face of America. Let's call it as it is.
And that was by Dave Lefcourt.
He's right about that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So I thought that was a good article. And our guests still haven't called in yet. Hopefully he will.
I hope he realizes this Eastern Standard Time.
Yeah, I told him. So he knows because he's called our show last week.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go into this one. This one's about Donald Rumsfeld.
Oh, I can hardly remember who he is.
Justice Department appeals Rumsfeld's torture decision. Daily Whistleblower News. The Department of Justice will appeal the court ruling allowing a suit to move forward, holding Donald Rumsfeld accountable for his role in the alleged torturing of an American civilian, Army veteran, and GAP client. The case is only one of two torture suits against Rumsfeld allowed to move forward. Let's see. Two lawsuits. I was going to get the... I'm going to go through the whole thing here. U.S. District Judge James Gwynne this month ruled for the contractor, an American civilian and former Army veteran who provided translation services to the military in Iraq in 2004 and 2005. Gwynne said Rumsfeld is not entitled to qualified immunity. The judge's decision is here. The contractor, whose name is confidential in the suit, is in Washington Federal District Court, has a right to be free from conduct and conditions of confinement that shook the conscience, Gerwin said. Gerwin of Cleveland Federal District Court looked over the case of January 10, 2010, from Judge Colleen Culler, Cultley, of U.S. District, or whatever, designation, and to hear the suit in 2008. Justice Department lawyer James Whitman of Civil Division's Tort Branch said a court filing this week that Rumsfeld is entitled to the interlocutory appeal because Gerwin rejected Rumsfeld's qualified immunity argument. Whitman said the appeal in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit relieves Rumsfeld from his obligation to answer the complaint. All right. So, and it goes on. I suggest you go to this. It's called the BLT, the Blog of Legal Times. All right. And check that out. So it's really quite aggravating. Another good news today, and I guess our guest is not with us here. So anyway, what was I going to say? Oh yeah.
Why don't we play a little audio?
I was going to do that. Palestinians accept new Israeli truths, but the Gaza envoy foils Israeli blockade. I thought that was kind of nice. Gaza envoy from Africa, right, made it in.
Wonder if they're from South Africa or...
I'm not sure exactly. I forgot what the rule.
The African to Gaza aid convoy has bypassed the Israeli blockade and reached the Gaza Strip, where they're giving aid and supplies to oppressed Palestinians. That's good.
Yeah, the problem with this one is that you can't passport it. Sorry, guys, just a little interruption here. It wasn't planned.
But at least we could have them on for like 15 minutes, I
guess.
Yeah.
Try it out.
Or we could have them on at half past.
I'm sorry, but the person you called has a voicemail box that has not been set up yet. Goodbye.
Goodbye. All right, so that's not so cool. And
maybe he's trying to call in. Maybe he has the wrong number.
Could be. Well, he called here before. He called directly. I sent him my phone number. He called. I had talked to him for an hour yesterday, or the day before yesterday. And so that's, you know, that's at the end of that, folks. We apologize for our guests not calling and not canceling. Just trying to see if I got another number on him. This is so not cool. And I apologize for not having his number here.
Sorry, folks.
I'm pretty sure that was his number, though. And unfortunately, he's not.
I'm sorry, but the person you called has a voice mailbox that has not been set up yet.
Oh.
Goodbye.
That's too bad.
Goodbye,
well,
and good riddance here. All right.
Well,
so
in the
anyway,
meantime, we'll try to find a little audio to play for you guys.
Yeah, so bear with us here, and I'm hoping that shouldn't have actually played, so I'm hoping that don't lose this. So. Oh, we're still on. Okay.
Yeah, go to.
I'm hoping our audio is still on. So, what, you want to go to a quick music break?
No, we'll find a little...
More articles.
More articles,
yeah,
and we'll find some audio to play.
Yeah.
We have a whole lot of things that we posted here anyway for you folks.
Yeah.
Do you have one little audio? Might be good.
Do I have any audio? No.
I had that one from David Icke.
Yeah,
did you post that on Gaddafi's, on what happened when Gaddafi originally took over, before he took over in Libya, what was happening there?
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of an interesting one. I thought maybe you
would. I don't recall. But if you give me a second here, I will go to it. In the meantime, what I'm going to do is, instead of being sounding completely lost, I'm going to
play a little song.
Okay.
We'll take a little music break while we organize ourselves here, folks.
Yeah.
Just be patient with us.
Because our guest did not bother to call us, so that's not cool.
Thank you.
video here that I can't find. So, you said there was one. Maybe a truth?
No, I don't know. American War Machine. Yeah.
Okay. Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Might be a good one to play since our guest did not bother calling in. Okay. This one is very interesting to me because there was a Libyan rebels and they were I posted an article a couple of weeks or a month ago about the Israel was buying, was recruiting mercenaries for...
Yeah, I remember that.
For the Libyan... I don't know if it was the Libyan rebels, though. It was... They were...
In that...
It was for... It wasn't for the Libyan rebels. It was for Gaddafi.
Right. Because they said that
weird.
He was Jewish.
Yeah. And he was a friend of the Jews. Our friend of Israel, I should say.
Well, let's see what this has to say.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's go. Let's try this one. These are Libyan rebels and the Israeli connection.
Here, folks.
No. Aye, aye.
I was very interested in that, too. That's too bad.
I am so aggravated here. That's too bad about this guy.
Exile Libyan monarchy's role.
Maybe we can get it here.
Okay, try that again.
Nope, not available in my country. Not yours.
The Al-Fatah revolution. The overthrow of a king. Truth has triumphed. Libyan monarchy. Okay, we read that. The uprising in Libya, which has been portrayed by many in the West as a democratic movement, has been symbolized by the tricolored rebel flag. The flag is, in fact, the flag of the oppressive, undemocratic monarchy of Idris. At the start of the conflict, elements of the rebels in Benghazi held aloft pictures of King Idris. Whilst by no means are all the rebels monarchists, it is, however, important to highlight the overthrown Libyan monarchy's history, influence in Benghazi, and relationship with the West. It is of no surprise, then, that the exiled monarchy of Idris has played a hidden hand in the conflict, closely working with their old allies in NATO in an attempt to regain their lost status in Libya and return, in quotes, to democracy, as His Royal Highness Prince Idris bizarrely and unashamedly declares in his CNN interview. Okay.
That's the end of that. Sorry, folks, again, they've been banned in our country here.
Two videos banned. That's too bad.
It's funny that they've actually been put on American websites, but they're...
Okay.
Is there anything else that you like?
Well, that was... Primarily interested in.
You know,
which is too bad.
Yeah, I just kind of really, really mess things up.
Joe Rogan, The American War Machine.
Yeah, let's see what that one's about. Maybe that's been banned in the United States too.
A lot of shit comes up that people would want to vote on, like the bailouts, the war, all things of this nature. There's a lot of things that people would like. It's going to affect us. We would like to vote on this. But you don't get to vote on it. You get to vote on a representative. These people are going to represent you once they get into office. And think about some of the laws that are in place to protect corporations. Think about some of the laws that are in place that fuck people over every day. They wouldn't be there if people were voting for them. We all have this desire to have someone lead us. We all have this feeling where we need someone who's smarter and wiser, who represents us. You know, and when you're really fucking dumb, the problem is really dumb people, they get a say in everything too. And they're subject to a lot of tricks. They're subject to nationalism. They're subject to these kind of ridiculous rah, rah, rah America speeches that don't say jack shit. They say nothing. It's all just this cheerleading fucking event. And they're subjective. They can't help it. They're dumb. They don't know they're being bullshitted. They grew up around dumb people. They go to work with dumb people. There's no one in their family that's interesting or asks any questions at all. And they just get sucked right into it, man. The society is so greedy, we're willing to go to war. We're willing to go places and send these big metal machines that kill people and fuck people up just so we can make more money. And the way our society is set up, I mean, I've heard it argued, and argued successfully, that our society runs on war. You know, it runs on the domination of the other parts of the world. And literally, that's the only way you can control a gigantic chunk of the globe. You have to keep everybody down, you know, and that's what our society is based on. We can't be fighting over each other because, you know, this guy's like, a million people die in Iraq, and everybody goes, hey, as long as it doesn't happen over here. But it is, that is over here. It's just over here, over there. The same thing. It's the people you don't know that were born somewhere else who fucking got jacked. You get trapped in that whole idea of, you know, this is my team, these are my people, and, you know, someone fucking plays a country music song and throws up a flag, and I'm in. Fuck it. This feels good. Feels good at the end, right? Feels good with God bless America. Feels good. Singing around with a bunch of other people and you're all drinking. We're the fucking baddest motherfuckers on the planet. Woo! And that's how people get recruited. It's a clusterfuck. These poor fucking kids. Could you imagine being 18, 19, being talked into doing this shit for a bunch of bloodthirsty motherfuckers who just are trying to get whatever they're trying to get over there, whatever the fuck it is, whether it's lithium, you know, minerals in the mountains that they used to make cell phones, whether it's 90% plus of the world's opium supply. 90% That is a multi-billion dollar business. And if you think these fucking industrialist cocksuckers that are running the world are going to leave that money behind, you're fucking crazy. Dude, they've got United States Army troops guarding poppy fields. There's fucking so much heroin there. I mean, it's incredible.
We're gonna spare you the bizarreness of this. But the guy's absolutely right.
He's right. The only thing I object to is language. If you could clean that up a little bit, it would be much better.
We're subject to a couple of things here, so often, but yeah, just
I agree with him 100%. I just wish he'd express it in a different way.
A little bit. Just clean it up a little. It's like, this is broadcasting, you know, I gotta be somewhat careful. Somewhat careful. I know that might be hypocritical of me, but
I don't want to listen to that
I don't particularly. I didn't really enjoy myself listening to that, so I'm sure others didn't either. And let's see. I got this one's a little longer. I'll play that later. We got Woody in the Ring coming up here to join us tonight at 9 o'clock. I'm sorry that we weren't able to bring our guest in to see you, but maybe in a way it was his work is very, very, very controversial, and he's not really well loved by the media since he trashes them pretty regularly.
One of the people he talks about is Kramer.
And he calls them, you know, and rightfully so. They all have an agenda, but here's one.
He writes about media crooks.
Maybe there's a good reason why CNBC has a... This is by our...
Guest that didn't call in.
Guest who didn't call in. Mike Spavis. Maybe there's a good reason why CNBC has a show called Fast Money. If you follow the advice of these guys, your money is likely to evaporate very fast. Likewise, it's beginning to see why Kramer's show is called Mad Money. You're likely to get mad if you follow his advice, or maybe you have... be a madman to watch it. Is it just me, or do these guys look evil? And they got all the guys from MSNBC. Watch TV, get rich. In my opinion, the claim is in violation of SEC rules. Not to mention that fact that it is a complete lie. In fact, the opposite is true. Watch TV, become poor. The only people getting rich when you watch TV are those behind CNBC, including the sponsors. Of course, most of the shows on CNBC have the token babe there to offset some of the testosterone overload.
Do yourself a favor. Pick up the phone and call the SEC. Demand they remove this stock-pumping network from the airwaves. If the SEC were doing its job, it would have shut CNBC down long ago and sent the stock manipulators to prison. Understand this. The SEC is partners with Wall Street, just like the FDA is partners with Big Pharma. These government agencies aren't protecting you. I actually ran into one of those guys on Fast Money, Pete Najarian, at a Charles Schwab active trader forum back in March of 2008. Excuse me. Let's see. Pardon me.
Since the Schwab Invest event is only a mile away, I want to offer my insights to investors. Make no mistake, I don't watch CNBC. I don't even have cable since I have no time for trash. I only saw the show once when I was on a business trip bored in my hotel room. That's the only reason I ever knew who Pete was. I handed Mr. Najarian a copy of my book, America's Financial Apocalypse, How to Profit from the Next Great Depression. I told him that he was...
that we were seeing the very beginning of what will be the biggest crisis since the Great Depression. I asked him to take a look at the book and contact me if he or anyone else at CNBC would like to discuss the coming depression. He agreed. Of course, he was the speaker at the event, and I'm sure he cleared a nice fee. He was a pleasant man and a good speaker, but he failed to address most of the questions the audience had about the economy. You need to understand that anyone who makes a career being on television isn't going to know what's going on in the economy or the stock market. You can't do both. You're either spending all your time researching and analyzing the economy and stock market, or you're in production rehearsing your show. In fact, even most experts on Wall Street have become clueless about the economy and the stock market.
Let's see. Why would Schwab have anyone else speak at this event other than a TV personality from their big marketing partner, CNBC? Because they want you to only have access to the dog and pony bull from the CNBC. And they know that most people attach credibility to someone if they're a TV personality, which is a huge mistake. The Schwab event was in early March 2008, the weekend before Bear Stearns was handed over to J.P. Morgan. Compliments of taxpayers. As we all know, much has happened since then, and yet, despite contracting CNBC on numerous occasions before and since then, including Kramer's show, I've heard nothing. In fact, I contacted Larry Kudlow's production crew in May 07, and as well as several times, I haven't heard nothing. Larry has my book, as do hundreds of other useless media clowns and shills. But anyway, that's kind of the extent of Sathis' work. And he goes on quite a bit.
We'll read that after our next segment. Yeah. Our next segment.
And you can go to AVA, AV as in Victor, A, research.com. All right. Let's go to
our introductory music.
On the ropes as you step into the ring with Woody. Tonight's topics, NFL news, NBA news, and of course, some baseball. Let's get started with the NFL. Former Chicago Bear running back and current Cincinnati Bengal jailbird running back Cedric Benson was sentenced to 20 days in jail after reaching a deal to settle two misdemeanor assault cases in Texas. He was arrested in 2010 for allegedly punching a bar employee in Austin. He pleaded no contest to a charge of assault with injury in that case. He was also arrested last month for allegedly punching a former roommate in downtown Austin. He said he will surrender to authorities on October 17th, which is the Monday of Cincinnati's bye week. This is a guy who was a former number one draft pick. He was supposed to be the next best thing there in Chicago, and he flamed out there, and anyone that seems to go to the Cincinnati Bengals seems to get arrested. So, he's right at home with the rest of them. All right, moving on a little bit. Right now, a lot of NFL teams are cutting some big-name guys. A lot of it has to do with money issues. The Bears just mentioned cut Vernon Golston. And he was the sixth overall draft by the Jets in 2008. The Jets got rid of him. And, the Bears now have gotten rid of him, and it just seems like his talents are waning. He doesn't seem to be too into football. He's more into the money that he made and whatever. Former Pro Bowl center Andre Goodrow from the Cowboys released. The Vikings let go Rhett Boomer. The Broncos cut veteran Nate Jones. And a lot of other big-name guys are gone. I think the Patriots cut a big-name cornerback who has over six interceptions last year. So, it's what have you done for me lately? I guess it doesn't even matter in the NFL. It's all about numbers and everything else. Speaking of numbers, a guy who wasn't cut or waived, Michael Vick. The Philadelphia Eagles agreed to terms on a six-year deal with quarterback Michael Vick. The team confirmed on Monday. The new contract is worth $100 million with about $40 million guaranteed, has been reported to this at this time. The contract replaces the one-year franchise tag that would have paid him over $16 million this season. You know, 7 years ago, Vick had signed a 10-year, $130 million deal with the Atlanta Falcons. Obviously, his NFL career was interrupted by the dogfighting charges, and he went bankrupt and everything else. And, you know, redemption is sweet. Vick's, you know, right on top. A lot of people would say he's maybe in the top five NFL quarterbacks right now. But if you kind of rank him, Vick's, like, right on the bubble with that, you know. But it's close, and I think Vick is only going to get better. The guy's got a gun, and he's definitely got good feet. So we'll see what can happen. I think it would have been, if Plexico Burress had been signed by the Eagles, I think it would have been a great addition to their offense. I think it really would have helped him out. But obviously that didn't happen. But, you know, we'll just have to see. I'm pretty sure the Eagles, they got a good deal when they signed Vick. Even though, you know, they probably should have made him play out this franchise contract, you know, for $17 million, whatever it was, the exact number, $16 million or something. I mean, but I guess they want him to be happy, and I guess they want him to feel that he's the man, and they don't want him slipping away after next season. So, you know, Eagles are willing to spend the money. Well, you know, we'll see if it works out for them. You know, they certainly thought they had a winner in Donovan McNabb, and that didn't pan out. And, you know, so we'll see how it goes. Moving forward, a little bit of NBA stuff. Now, a little while back, Jarvis Crittenden, former Georgia Tech guard and NBA player, he was one of the guys that got bagged bringing a gun into the locker room. Now, his most recent charge is with murder. In the August 19th shooting death of an Atlanta mother, he'll surrender to authorities today, according to his attorney, Atlanta-based Brian Steele. Crichton was also charged with unlawful flight to avoid prosecution, and he was expected to fly from Los Angeles late Monday evening back to his hometown. According to the attorney, Mr. Crichton hired me, and we immediately made plans to satisfy the warrant as he is falsely charged with murder. Yeah, we'll see. But again, you know, you want to have guns around, you want to bring them into an NBA locker room, and, you know, you got in some trouble for that. And it just goes to show you that, you know, having guns around usually means you're going to use them, and that usually means someone's going to get killed. So we'll see what happens. Moving on. NBA owners and players plan to meet Wednesday for the second time since July 1st lockout in hopes of bringing the significant gap in collective bargaining negotiations to a close. The sides remain hundreds of millions apart, and the lack of progress Wednesday could jeopardize the start of training camp, set to open in early October, and the preseason schedule. The last meeting on August 1st ended with NBA Commissioner David Stern saying he did not think players were bargaining in good faith. The next day, the league filed a federal lawsuit against the players and an unfair labor practice charge with the National Labor Relations Board. As I've said before, I think this is going to end up the same way hockey ended up. No season. I would be very surprised if the owners and the players are able to get together on this one. I think that in order for something to really happen, for change to occur, I think they're going to have to probably lose the season, and that's probably what's going to happen. Now, speaking of seasons, the Major League Baseball season is coming to a close. At this point, the Yankees have lost 10 of 12 games to the hated Boston Red Sox. Now, many people are saying that this series right here is a very important one. Currently, the Yankees are up by a score of 4-2. They say the Yankees need to send a message. They need to win 2 out of 3, so on and so forth. Frankly, I'm not a believer of this. For all I care, the Yankees could lose the rest of the games with the Red Sox going out. Doesn't really matter to me. I think what's important is that baseball is a thing, is a law of averages. And to me, if the Red Sox keep beating the Yankees, that eventually it's going to be the Yankees' turn to stick it to the Red Sox. And what better time would be in the playoffs? Sure, I'd like to get a couple wins under my belt going into the playoffs, so I believe that I can actually beat these guys. But a lot of times you see the media and people hyping up stuff in people's heads that doesn't even exist. You know, you end up hearing the pitcher say, no, I never felt any kind of pressure or whatever, this or that. And whereas the media is like, oh, my God, he must be feeling tons of pressure and so on and so forth. And a lot of times that's just not the case. Players think and behave a lot more differently than a lot of the media portrays. So we'll just have to wait and see. Obviously, the Yankees and the Red Sox are going to meet in the playoffs. You know, one's going to win the division, one's going to win the wild card. So we'll just have to do a little bit of wait and see. Frankly, I think it would be nice if the Yankees won a few games against the Red Sox. I really wouldn't like them to lose the rest on the way out. You know, it would be good for a little bit of confidence thing. My confidence, not their confidence. I'm sure they don't care. But we'll just have to wait and see again. That's it for this week. Shout out to all my fans out there. Ron, Mark, Leo, Dino, Troy, Greg at AFS, everyone from Northeast Athletic Club, especially my partner, Money Mike. That's it for this week. Summer's coming to a close. Enjoy it while it lasts.
Okay, thank you, Woody.
Truth out, have come. a bunch. Huffington Post, Wrench.com. Well, World News Daily, it doesn't surprise me because that's a neocon newspaper.
Prison Planet.
Prison Planet. I'm surprised because Watson is usually pretty good.
Yeah.
And
InfoWars.
InfoWars, a lot of people have questioned Alex Jones' credibility over the years, and Prison Planet is
affiliated with him,
but Joseph
American Free Press.
American Free Press is questionable. I really don't know.
But we've gone to those other sites many times and gotten some pretty good articles out of them.
That's why he
criticizes those, and I wanted to find out.
Unfortunately, he's not here to
defend why he's calling them hack sites, and I would be interested to find out.
Yeah.
Those were some questions I wanted to ask him, and maybe if we have him on another time, and he does come on, we can ask him some questions about
them. Here, Mark Dizer and Alex Jones. Let's see what he says about them. Curious what he says about Alex Jones.
This was the guest that we had on last week.
Yeah, Mike Stathis was rather. For some reason, he didn't call in tonight, we're doing it by proxy, I guess.
I hate to waste time on useless liars and profiteers. However, if you want to be a great investor, you have to be able to recognize trash in order to avoid it. I want to alert you to the latest scam being led by the biggest opportunist liars, and censoring scumbags in the world today. As a manner by which to boost their own swollen bank accounts, disinfo agents Alex Jones and Max Kaiser have been promoting a campaign to get sheep across the globe to buy silver with the ridiculous intent to crush J.P. Morgan.
Their reasoning is as follows. Since the bank has a large short position in silver, if people buy it in hordes, it will drive up the price, causing them to sell at a big loss. Furthermore, since J.P. Morgan's short position is allegedly so huge, it would be impossible for the bank to liquidate without massive losses, causing the stock to, as Kaiser says, go to zero. Note how the Guardian has contributed to this scam, and they wrote an article as well on it.
Let me be clear. Kaiser's arguments are baseless. There is nothing more than a scam to profit by exploiting widespread disaster for the bank. Any real investment professional who understands how the markets work would laugh at this assertion.
Kaiser is telling people that silver is headed to $500. He's practically guaranteeing it, and he is claiming that hedge funds are going to make it go there themselves because they are buying it in mass. As Jones discusses how the dollar will be virtually worthless, the caller mentions a great point, that he can't use silver to pay his bills. Notice the colorful response used by Jones and Kaiser to address this excellent point. They talk about historical events, and through buy silver, you are part of the revolution. You are part of the movement. And Kaiser talks about the supply of silver drying up, and a short supply of American silver eagles. Well, of course, American eagles are in short supply. Silver dealers have loaded up. If you were a dealer, wouldn't you buy as many silver eagles as you could with all of the propaganda being spewed? It's easy money. Kaiser continues to make idiotic statements. I suppose the guy pictured below isn't aware that silver is headed to $500 per ounce. If you look closely, you can see that he works at a huge operation. Why are all these precious metal dealers desperate to sell you gold and silver if they're headed to the moon?
That's a good point. Kaiser has no idea what he's talking about. It's a clear example of manipulation. Ask yourself who you're going to trust, a radio host who makes money from gold and silver ads, as well as possibly being paid under the table by dealers to pump these metals, or me. To those of you who are not familiar with my track record, he talks about record on the economic collapse, I invite you to have a look. Furthermore, note that I have issued a $100,000 reward for the first person who can demonstrate that there is someone who can match my track record. In the past, I have discussed that Alex Jones is only concerned with lining his pockets while he portrays himself as a patriot. using scare tactics and exaggerations of the facts. Jones and company pumped gold and silver, guns, and food rations in order to cash in from their Zionist sponsors.
I don't know. You know, I have to say,
I've never really spent time listening to his show. I've just read his articles, so I can't really comment on that.
I've listened to Alex Jones to give him credit. We've actually had Alex Jones on our show, and he was excellent, and he was right on the money when he was talking about the conspiracy theorists. Remember, we had him on in 2004,
right?
On our FM show, and when Kerry was running for president, and Bush and Kerry were third cousins, he brought that up. He also brought up the fact that they were skull and bones, and he talked about the skull and bones, and he talked about all these other things. And a lot of information. That he's talked about has been true, and I don't.
I'm not sure I agree with his opinion on Alex Jones.
On everything, no, but
on some things I agree with him, but on this I'm not sure that I don't really know enough about it.
Right, and the other person that he knocks is Charles Salente, which I can understand that as well, I guess. It looks like Karl Rove being all out of there.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. But anyway, we're just going through this site.
And he's maybe right about this silver thing. I don't know enough about the selling and buying.
We're not experts, and we're not claiming to be, and we're not promoting gold or buy or this or that. All we were hoping to do is have this guy on tonight, Mike, on to explain some of this to us. But we're about as lost as you are when it comes to this. But I do recommend you might want to go to his website.
Take a look at what he has to say, and you judge for yourself.
It's rather bombastic in some regards, but,
you have to kind of sift through that.
Yeah, and, go understand where he's coming from, I guess. But these... there's a couple of people that he talked about that I was kind of surprised, actually, that he doesn't really like.
I have to agree with what he said about Kramer, the financial guy on TV. I think he doesn't know anything.
Yeah. Let's see. He means on Main Street.
I belong to that group.
There's not really much going on here. Friday, September 16th, 2011. Okay, we're in the future now. All right, tell me, Mike will be posting an article on this, I guess. Enough of Mike's stuff, and I'm getting kind of lost in
go to the next page on this.
I'm really kind of getting lost. And I kind of lost my enthusiasm about Mike. it's too bad. I had a lot of questions to ask him regarding his...
Something might have happened, so...
It's possible. It's not the first time that this has happened to us. Well, here we go again. Look at this. Damn. I don't know why this thing keeps popping up wherever you go.
I don't know. It does that to me every time.
Really annoying.
Computers are a mixed blessing, folks, as you probably already know.
Yeah. This one, I was going to talk about this one. Yeah,
approaching
this one,
collapse.
Wait. It's going to happen. Okay.
About organic food?
Yeah.
Probably from Natural News, which is a great site. Wonderful site. Approaching collapse. Don't panic. Go organic. So-called business as usual is neither sustainable nor even possible for much longer. Out-of-control energy corporations, Wall Street, the Pentagon, agribusiness, biotech corporations, and indentured politicians have driven us to the brink. They tell us, don't worry, trust the experts, things will soon return to normal. But reality and common sense tell a different story. Girl watering, extreme weather crop failures, commodities, speculation, land grabs, escalating prices, soil degradation, depleted aquifers, routine common contamination, food-related disease, mass hunger represents a new norm for food and farming. The global agricultural system, with the exception of the rapidly growing organic sector, rests upon a shaky foundation. Patented seeds, genetically engineered crops, expensive and destructive chemicals, energy-intensive inputs, factory farms, monoculture production, eroding soils, unsustainable water use, taxpayer subsidies, and long-distance hauling and distribution, including massive imports that amount to 15% of the U.S. food supply, amount to a recipe for disaster. A perfect storm or ultimate recession is described by Lester Brown in his new book, World on the Edge, could develop at any time. Precipitated by extreme weather and crop failures on a massive scale, a growing number of nations, including the oil giants in China, are now scrambling to secure overseas farmland to feed their domestic populations. World grocers and supermarkets, including the U.S., have on the average only a four-day supply of food on hand. An oil shock, global disease pandemic, prolonged drought in the American heartland, or a nuclear meltdown could set off global food panic. Supermarket shelves and grain silos would be stripped bare within a short period of time. Have you thought about this? Are you and those in your local community ready for this? World grain reserves amount to less than 75 days of supply. Harvests of strategic food grains and cereals have basically leveled off or even decreased, with enormous amounts of acreage now providing fuel for cars instead of food for people. At the same time, affordable fossil fuel energy supplies have peaked, with the world increasingly dependent on extreme oil and natural gas extraction, deep sea and Arctic drilling, tar sands, and fracking. Accelerating the prices of petroleum-based farm inputs, as well as food distribution and processing costs. Billions of people in the global south are now spending 50 to 70% of their household income on food, although in the U.S. it is only 11%. Hydrologists and agronomists warn that peak water is fast approaching when the already limited availability of water from underground aquifers for crop irrigation exponentially decreases. Peak soil is also fast approaching, with soil erosion and desertification.
Desertification.
Already degrading 25% of the Earth's land. Thank you, Leo. Peak soil is directly related to unsustainable farming and forestry practices, including heavy pesticide use, chemical fertilizers, genetically engineered monocrops, and non-sustainable grazing and clear cutting. Meanwhile, global population numbers in direct relation to poverty and lack of education for women and demand for food, especially meat and animal products, are accelerating. Of course, we could go on, and citing the ever more disturbing information we read every day in the mainstream media and on the Internet, but the life or death question is, what are we going to do about it? Crash-resistant and climate-friendly, the organic revolution. Fortunately, over the past 40 years, a new generation of organic farmers and ranchers have proliferated, building upon the wisdom and practices of indigenous and traditional farmers over the past 10,000 years. A growing crop of organic farmers and gardeners are producing increasing amounts of healthy, nutritious food without the use of chemical fertilizers, pesticides, genetically engineered seeds, or animal drugs. At the same time, these 21st century organic stewards of the land are consuming far less, 50% or more, fossil fuels and water. Study after study has demonstrated that organic small farms in the developing world outproduce chemical and genetically engineered farms by a factor of 2 to 1, while in the industrialized nations, sustainable organic yields are comparable in normal weather to industrial farms, but far superior, up to 50 to 70% higher in times of drought or torrential rain. The types of extreme weather that have become the new norm, in other words, not only can organic farming feed the world, but it is a fact that the only way that we're going to be able to feed the world in this 21st century era of energy, water, and climate crisis. The burning question then becomes, how do we build a stronger movement that can promote and scale up organic, local, regional-based systems of food and farming? How can we, as quickly as possible, build up critical mass of organic farms, gardens, seed banks, farm schools, and distribution networks in all the local regions of North America and the world? We don't have room in this essay to go into all the details, but here are a few things that millions of us have already started to do. They are moving us forward and preparing us for survival in the likely eventuality of economic collapse. Number one.
Step up public education and consciousness raising. We have now crossed a major threshold of raising public awareness. The majority of Americans say they prefer organic food for a variety of health, environmental, and ethical reasons. After 40 years of public education and campaigning, organic foods and products are the fastest growing items in American grocery carts. 30 million households comprising 75 million people are now buying organic foods and other products on a regular basis. 50% of U.S. consumers say they prefer organic foods, citing a wide variety of reasons that we and the organic movement have taught them. Millions of young people and urban residents are starting to learn organic farming and gardening techniques.
Number two. Step up the campaign against industrial agriculture and genetic engineering. The more we educate people about the hazards of chemical and energy-intensive food and farming and genetically modified organisms, the greater the demand for organic foods and products and the greater the number of new organic farmers, young organic farm apprentices, and urban organic gardeners, now 12 million strong. The Achilles heel or weakest link of the industrial agriculture is truthful labeling. Consumers' right to know. If toxic pesticides, chemicals, and genetically engineered ingredients are labeled, consumers will not buy them. Retailers will not sell them, and farmers will not grow them. Even though Washington has fallen under the control of Monsanto and corporate agribusiness, we can still change public policies at the state and local level, with grassroots-powered ballot initiatives and state legislation. Even though we live in Monsanto Nation, we can still bring down Goliath.
Number three, link up with other movements, local to global, reducing global poverty, eliminating war, and stabilizing this climate go hand in hand. The best way to reduce global rural poverty and conflict and eliminate war is through land reform, sustainable organic farming practices. With land reform and technical assistance, millions of organic farms in the global south can develop and prosper, helping the world's poorest people, especially women, to produce far more food with less or no fossil fuel or chemical inputs. This organic revolution will enable several billion peasants in rural farm villages to rise up from poverty and reduce the unsustainable population growth that accompanies abject poverty. At the same time, one of the best ways to reduce fossil fuels use and naturally sequester climate destabilizing greenhouse gases is to change our current land use practices to go organic. For 10,000 years, indigenous people and traditional farmers fed the world with organic farming and animal husbandry practices. By converting the world's 12 billion acres of farmland and pasture land back to organic soil management, we will be creating, instead of destroying, soil fertility, as well as restoring the soil food web's amazing ability to permanently sequester enormous amounts of climate destabilizing CO2
to increase plants.
Yeah, with organic soil management spread across the world's 12 million acres of farmland and pasture land, a global mobilization to replant the 10 billion acres of forest and industry and agribusiness have destroyed. We can literally reverse global warming. So. What bothers me is I just read a report that said the reason that what would actually happen without and what is happening really beginning to happen because of so much of the climate problems that we're having, you know,
with the extreme weather. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, mm-hmm. The extreme weather.
General global warming that we're having.
That, you know, caused by solar activity.
Right.
Not so much human activity, but solar activity.
Right. That we have no. We didn't do it, folks. It's not something we've done.
Yeah. It's not really. I mean, we're not helping it, but
we didn't cause it.
But the thing you got to remember is that it's our modern agricultural, especially in the United States, but the modern agricultural techniques that we've used have actually fed a grand part of the world for many years.
Mm-hmm.
All right? It's because of that, and it's not organic farming really that did it. It was just the increase of, you know, of the ability of the American people, American farmer, you know,
well, to do it.
But then what's happened is, since the American farmer...
He's been put out of business
pretty much. And now you got agribusiness, which is trying to reduce the
factory farms,
reducing the quality of the food, reducing the
torturing the animals too.
Yeah, and injecting them and just
horrible,
just destroying our food system, so that today Americans suffer 400 times the cancer rate of any other country.
Any other country.
Mm-hmm. All right. Except the United States. And that's because no other country in the world accepts our food products anymore. Okay? Because they're genetically modified.
Nobody wants to eat that crap.
And we can't export our beef anymore to most countries because they
have a ban on genetically modified
food or growth hormones or any of that stuff. So while the rest of the world is eating organically, or at least unmodified foods, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Genetically modified.
Well, they've tried to push it into their market.
They're trying, but they're resisting. And we've read hundreds of articles on that over the years on our show here, and about different European countries and South American countries and so on resisting genetically modified products. And how the United States is, you know, in bed with the FDA, which doesn't even require them to label their products,
which I think is pretty
disgraceful overall. And
let's see, NATO-led rebels plundering in peaceful neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Lynch law in Libya. Let's see. Funders of Islamophobia in U.S. are named. The 130-page report by the Center for American Progress, released on Friday, identified foundations that have provided more than $42 million to key individuals and organizations that have spearheaded the nationwide effort between 2001 and 2009. Sometimes the money flowing from these foundations and their donors is clearly designed to promote Islamophobia, but more often the support provided is for general purpose use, which is the think tanks and grassroots organizations that put to use on their primary purpose, spreading the messages of hate and fear as far as wide as they can, the report says. Among the funders are organizations that have long been associated with extreme right in the U.S., as well as several Jewish family foundations that have supported settler groups in Israel. Let's see who they are. Haitian folks will I get this article off? Okay.
Sometimes the money flowing from this foundation is not as clearly designated to promote its love and hobby. Did you
read that
part?
I just
read
that part.
Okay. Among the funders.
Donors Capital Fund, Richard Mellon's Geff Foundations, Lindy and Harry Bradley Foundation, Newton D. and Rochelle F. Becker Foundations and Charitable Trust, Russell Berry Foundation, Anchorage Charitable Trust, William Rosenwald Family Fund, Fairbrook Foundation are among the organizations funding anti-Islam experts who promote Islamophobia. These experts are, among others, Frank Gaffney at the Center for Security Policy, David Yerushalami at the Society of Americans for National Existence, Daniel Pipes at the Middle East Forum, Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch and Stop Islamization of America, Stephen Emerson of the Investigative Project on Terrorism. These people spread the information through conservative organizations, politicians, and news channels like Fox, the report says. The Donor Capital Fund was the single biggest contributor, paying USD $18 million to the Clarion Fund during the 2008 election, which distributed 30 million anti-Muslim DVDs through local newspapers.
Unbelievable.
Amazing, isn't it?
So, yeah, I mean, this kind of tells you folks what's going on. And, you know, Lila and I have tried forever to warn people who's behind it all. It reads like the sponsors of NPR.
Yeah.
Or national, or public radio.
Yeah.
Not public radio, but
CPTV?
CPTV, yeah, and public broadcasting. You ever look at those sponsors? Back here. And
that was a 130-page report by the Center for American Progress. What's that right there?
Oh, let's see.
Keep going. Let me see what it is.
Keep trying.
Libyan rebels. There's a lot on Libya. Al Gore says that we have to stop eating meat. Oh, he's such a hypocrite. Al Gore says we have to stop eating meat or cut back to save the earth.
Al Gore has been pretty much marginalized as far as
he's such a
value
hypocrite.
Goes, but Jesus,
this is what happened to me last night. I had to turn it off.
I don't know if you've got this problem, but this getting this pop-up search engine keeps popping up, driving you crazy. There you go. I bet anyone out there. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I bet anyone out there that right after Al Gore said we should stop eating meat to stop global warming, he went home and had a New York strip steak for dinner. This same person tells us we should stop using so much electricity in our homes, while his big mansions use many kilowatts to power that would power a subdivision. What a hypocrite Al Gore is. He says we have to cut down on using fossil fuels, and he owns Occidental Petroleum in Venezuela. This global warming fad trying to use a guilt trip about our carbon footprint is a fraud to squeeze more money out of us.
Let's hope I can get this article up. Okay. Yes. Nope.
Can't do it.
Unbelievable. I keep getting a pop-up on this thing. It's driving
me out of
my skull.
You're going to have to clear out your whole...
Well, you can't do that because it just won't come up. It constantly invades. So it's obvious there's an attack on it. Fear set in and panic begins. Run, receive, prepare for gold at 2100. I don't know, but, well, you know, we could read this. I don't like to cause a, this is really an opinion.
Market oracle.
I really rather not. Let's talk, if we're going to have an opinion, let's talk about Pat Robinson's opinion.
He thinks the crack in the Washington Monument is a sign from God.
Yeah. But, oh my God, look at this damn thing. Can't seem to get rid of it. I can't get rid of this.
You're going to have to run some scans and clean out everything.
It's just, I don't understand why this thing keeps coming up.
It's a fake thing.
Other one on that I really got a kick out of, which was on
right here, U.S. Energy on fracking. What's the
go
to that
another
right
one
now?
Here on toxic lead. Where is it? There it is. Okay.
The one on fracking.
Another one by Natural News. Got a lot of Natural News kind of.
Well, it's a good article. We can get it.
We'll come up for us.
What they do is they pump chemicals under.
Yeah, that's for natural gas and.
It poisons the groundwater.
Not only that, but it causes a great deal of. It's been known to cause earthquakes and stuff like that.
Yes. Hydraulic fracturing, also known as fracking, for the purpose of extracting natural gas from the earth, involves flooding it with millions of gallons of chemical-laden water. A practice that, by all estimates, has damaged the environment to some extent. But a U.S. Energy Department advisory panel, which happens to be padded with members connected to the natural gas industry, insists that fracking is safe and even contends that it will help to lower the carbon dioxide emissions allegedly responsible for so-called climate change. The recent report in the Washington Post explains that the ED's panel's notion that despite continual outcry over fracking operations, polluting rivers and groundwater supplies, natural gas fracking can safely continue as long as fracking companies agree to be more open about their actions and comply with monitoring requirements that track environmental impact and make this information publicly available. Okay, we're polluting everything, and they'll let them to continue to do it.
But in an industry that is already knowingly hiding the truth about its polluting activities and secretly dumping its toxic waste directly into the environment, for instance, it is naive for ED committee's members to purport that simply telling drilling companies to be more forthcoming is going to have a substantial beneficial impact.
I mean, how ridiculous can be? Well, the Energy Department's loaded with their...
They're all cronies. Huh?
Cronies.
Fracking, no matter how closely monitored, pollutes the environment in devastating ways. In order to release oil and gas from shale rock deep underground, Giant machines must force large amounts of water, sand, chemicals, and radioactive elements deep in the Earth's upper crust in order to crack the rock that potentially holds this valuable fuel. But in the process, the resultant radioactive chemical cocktail seeps into water tables, wells, rivers, lakes, as well as the various drinking water supplies to which these sources are fed.
No wonder we're all dying.
And even if the fracking industry suddenly decides to be more open and honest about the fact that drilling fluids are severely contaminating soil and water, the only thing that will change is that now everyone will be aware of it.
That's right.
They won't ban it.
They won't be punished for this or fined or anything.
No. And thanks to Energy Bill passed by Congress back in 2005, everybody remembers that nightmare with Dick Cheney, that exempts the natural gas drilling industry from having to comply with the U.S. Safe Drinking Water Act. I mean, only Cheney would put that up. The guy's a freaking murderer.
Yep.
Fracking operations are free to pollute as much as they please. They just might have to disclose this fact at some point in the future. The Shell Gas Committee of the Secretary of Energy Advisory Board, which put out the recent report endorsing fracking, does not even address this SDWA exemption. As a result, its recommendations are meaningless in all practical terms, as they will do absolutely nothing to stop the tide of environmental pollution being spewed by the fracking industry. Current water purification techniques are unable to capture methane and radon, for instance, both of which come from fracking, and consequently, drinking water supplies throughout Pennsylvania, which is a fracking hotspot due to its location in the Marcellus Shale Formation regions, are becoming increasingly toxic with no end in sight.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So as the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency continues its ongoing investigation into the environmental impacts of fracking, the SGS committee comes along and makes a few useless recommendations that says it will address the problems with fracking, but in reality will do absolutely nothing to solve them.
At least six SGS committee members have ties to the natural gas industry. The mindless recommendations made by SGS in support of the fracking industry make a lot of more sense, however, in light of the industries to which many of the members are connected. According to a recent report issued by Environmental Working Group, at least six SGS committee members are known to have connections to oil and gas industries.
Signed by 28 scientists from 22 universities and institutions in 13 states, all of whom object to the SGS panel's recommendations, the EWG report explains that Chairman John Deutsch, Stephen Holditch, Kathleen McGinty, Susan Tierney, and Daniel Yergin, and Mark Zoback all have financial ties to the oil and gas industries, a blatant conflict of interest for a committee that is supposed to offer unbiased counsel to the ED. SGS Chairman Dwayne Deutsch, for instance, currently serves on the board of the natural gas firm Chinery Energy. According to the WP, Deutsch was paid more than $1.4 million by Chinery and Schlumberger, another oil and gas firm, between 2006 and 2009. And Energy Secretary Stephen Chu, who was appointed directly by President Obama, chose Deutsch for the SGS chairman position, knowing full well his connections to the oil and gas industries. That's disgusting.
So just like the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, which is filled with officials connected to the pharmaceutical industry, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which is filled with officials connected to the biotechnical industry, the Energy Department is filled with officials connected to the oil and gas industries. And so it goes in the land of the free, where special interests run the government and its powerful regulatory agencies, driven by greed and an insatiable lust for power. Corporate snakes have quietly infiltrated the very agencies that were designed to protect us, the interests of the people, and have restructured them to serve corporate interests instead.
Well, now corporations have all the rights of citizens. So.
Yeah. I mean,
our charming Supreme Court saw that.
So screwed. There's one more tonight I wanted to read. and this is about how toxic lead is. They're trying to avoid shooting with lead bullets in Iowa. And the reason for that is...
they have another kind of bullet that they want to use?
It's because it kills a lot of other things besides what's intended to shoot it. Toxic lead to cover
Iowa
killing fields. Iowa, which gave us the carnival known as the Iowa Straw Poll, an artery-clogging deep-fried butter,
that's right.
Will unleash another health problem beginning September 1st. The Iowa legislature last year approved a dove hunting season, the first in more than 9 decades. However, the State Department of Natural Resources and Natural Resource Commission banned the use of lead shot and bullets. That led to the massive all-out assault by the National Rifle Association and the U.S. Sportsman Alliance. In a letter to Governor Terry Branstad, the NRA underscored its opposition by waving a veiled threat that banning lead ammunition is an attack on our freedoms. Absurd, replied Roberts of the American Bird Conservatory. You explained that the NRA continues to deliberately miscast the lead versus non-lead ammunition issue as an attack on hunting. Gee, here is is nothing in the Constitution or in any federal court decision that would prohibit the banning of any specific kind of ammunition. The NRA blatantly suggests that the ban on lead shot is designed to price hunters out of the market and keep them from taking part in the traversing Iowa fields and forests. For its evidence, it pointed out the cost of non-toxic ammo and higher than ammunition made of lead. And however, the use of non-toxic shots results in only 1-2% increase in total cost for hunters, according to a study conducted by National Wildlife Research Center. Certainly not enough to justify the NRA's paranoid panic that non-toxic bullets will lead to the decrease in hunting. Now, let's explain what that means.
Contrary to the NRA and USSA statements, there are several hundred scientific studies that conclude that lead shot is a health and environmental danger. Lead can cause behavioral problems, learning disabilities, reduced reproduction, neurological damage, genetic mutation. For those reasons alone, the U.S. bans lead in gasoline, water pipes, windows, potteries, toys, paints, and hundreds of other items. Wildlife is poisoned when animals scavenge on carcasses shot and contaminated with lead bullet fragments or pick up and eat spent lead shot pellets, mistaking them for food or grit. As many as 20 million birds and other animals die each year from lead poisoning.
Wow.
Humans can be poisoned by eating animals that have eaten the pellets from the ground or which have eaten decaying carcasses of birds that have been shot with lead ammunition. Iowa is only one of 15 states that don't have some regulation that bans lead and shot in ammunition. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in 1991... most European countries have banned the use of lead shot for hunting. How about that? The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services in 1991 banned the use of lead shot in all waterfowl hunting. The NRA screamed its opposition at the time. However, the ban didn't lead to a reduction of hunting or hunters, nor did it violate any part of the Constitution. R.T. Cox, in his column, The Sage Grouse, notes that bird hunters can leave 400,000 pellets per acre of intensely hunted areas. About 81,000 tons of lead shot are left on shooting ranges each year, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. Part of the reason for so much lead shot on the ground is that doves, which can fly up to 50 miles per hour, make sharp turns and are difficult to hit. While hunters may claim they shoot the birds as food sources, such claims are usually blatant lies meant to hide the reality that 20 million doves killed each year are nothing more than live targets. The 5-ounce mourning dove hit by shot provides very little usable meat. The NRA even advises hunters that for health reasons they should cut away a generous portion of meat around the wound channel.
And lead off the dove's killing fields isn't the only problem. An investigation by the North Dakota Department of 2007 revealed 58%. Are we already out of time?
Yeah, we're just about out.
We got 2 minutes. Okay.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. 2 minutes.
Hmm.
And just enough time for this. And lead poisoning is fewer than 400 in the state. A ban on lead shot was enacted in 2007. There are alternatives to using lead. Non-toxic bullets and shots are made from tungsten, copper, and steel without the negative health impacts. While some hunting advocates maintain that lead bullets are significantly better in the field,
there's no evidence
to suggest that green ammunition results in fewer kills. Nevertheless, disregarding scientific evidence and facing NRA wrath, President Steady agreed with the legislative panel discussing to ignore the findings of the state wildlife and who he said exceedingly their authority to restore lead shot hunting and said exceeded their authority to restore lead shot hunting. Andrew Page, the Director of Human Resources, said another opinion was far more local, logical than the NRA. If hunters are conservationists as they say they are, they should be the first to stand up and say they won't poison wildlife or the ecosystem. There we go. And he's absolutely right. And I want to thank everybody who joined us tonight. And, that's great.
Yeah.
And please join us again tomorrow night. Even though this feels like Wednesday night, I don't know why.
It's been crazy with the hurricane and everything else that's been happening. We were fortunate, and I hope everyone out there, of course, has been as fortunate.
Yeah, we were. So,
we thank you for listening.
Give our greatest sympathies to those who are suffering tonight.
Oh, yeah, terrible.
So anyway, I want to thank everybody, and we wish you a good evening.
And good night, folks.
Yeah. Everybody. All right.